Hello, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned in to my weekly wellness update podcast, bringing you the health news you can use. Isn't that a novel concept? All right. Well, what have we got this week? First up, study caprylic acid helpful for candida and bacterial biofilms. Now, a biofilm is what I call, that's the scientific term for what I call a germ gang. And that is when the bell tolls and the friendly germs, or the friendly bacteria, or the friendly candida, decide that they're going to take on a different color and they're going to become hostile to the human body. Power and numbers, they link together, they form networks. Literally, with candida, you have a weed forming, literally. At any rate, my point here is caprylic acid, which is a medium-chain fatty acid. This is what's so amazing about nutrition. I mean, this thing is just, what is it, 6 carbons long, and I think it's 6 carbons. I should probably know this stuff. it's either 6 or 8. I think it's 6. Anyway, I have to check that out. But it's a medium chain. It's not a short chain. And it's, you know, kind of in the family of things like undecanoic acid and lauric acid. And these medium chain fatty acids have antiseptic properties. Now you say, well, why is that? Well, caprylic acid, of course, is in mother's milk as a natural fatty acid. And it's there in this form partly as a germ-controlling compound. And it's very, very efficient because it doesn't affect human cells whatsoever adversely. If you don't use it for something like killing germs, you can just break it apart and use the fatty acids for fuel. That's essentially what it becomes, a source of fuel. But these things have direct interaction with germs. And this is interesting because, I mean, these germ gangs or biofilms are extremely resistant. I mean, once they get set up shop, they tend to hang on and be difficult to disrupt and disturb. And so here we have a good scientific study showing this was in patients with frequent urinary tract infections. And actually what they found in these patients was that it wasn't just a bacteria causing their urinary tract infections. It was a combination of germs, Candida albicans, Helicobacter pyloria, cytomegalovirus, and of course all of those are opportunistic infections, meaning they come along and they get into these germ gangs when the host is in a weakened state. So the longer you let digestive problems persist, or the more antibiotics you use, and the weaker your terrain becomes, then these germs can just come in and set up shop. So it was caprylic acid which was able to disrupt these germ gangs and bring relief to the frequent urination issue. And so that's very good news. Very good, nice, natural immune-boosting compound. And it's not just urinary tract. I mean, anytime you have a recurring something in the digestive tract, especially, it is more typical that germs involved are multiple in nature. Unfortunately, it's kind of like having a cesspool of germs. I know it's kind of gross to think about, but I mean, people, you know, like if they think H. pylori or Helicobacter pylori is, you know, a single infection causing stomach ulcers. Yes, but when they look at the electron microscope of these H. pylori infections, they're cesspools of germs. There's often multiple, many, up to 100 strains of different bacteria that shouldn't be in there. And oftentimes Candida albicans. And of course, the bacteria will live in the Candida albicans. Candida is big compared to the bacteria, which are small. So they find inside Candida to be a very friendly place to hang out. So they have germ parties, gang parties. I mean, it's something to think about if you have recurring issues. Doctors continue to poison millions of children with unnecessary antibiotics. It's a new study showing that the pediatricians in the United States write more than 10 million unnecessary antibiotic prescriptions every year, creating an untold amount of health damage. Now they are even showing that potentially one course of antibiotics can disturb the gut genome. Two is highly likely to. More than two is almost a guarantee. And yet we still have this rampant overuse of antibiotics. Unbelievable. I mean, it is as if we have lazy medicine. Our doctors just don't know what else to do, or they don't have tools. They just don't know. But they're causing massive damage doing this. This isn't a trivial issue. It is a major transgression against patients. And it's not just that they're creating antibiotic-resistant germs. It's that they're actually disturbing the gut-human genome connection relationship, which is vital to health. It's not just that you give antibiotics and it just automatically bounces back. That is now proven not to be the case. So this improper, unintelligent, reckless use of antibiotics is rampant by pediatricians in the United States and extremely health damaging. I think it's significant. It's not just a little trivial issue and to be excused because, well, they had something, we didn't know what it was. I mean, this is really gross incompetence of an entire profession. I shouldn't say entire, because I'm sure there's doctors that don't just hand out antibiotics all the time for everything. But there's certainly a lot of them going on throughout, or there wouldn't be 10 million unnecessary prescriptions every year. Lactoferrin activates hyaluronic acid synthesis. Now lactoferrin is a natural component of human and bovine milk. So it's in whey protein, for example. It's in colostrum. It's, of course, available as a purified supplement. And, of course, you naturally make lactoferrin. You make it in your tears, your saliva. Some of your immune cells make it. It's actually very well known as an immune-boosting compound and an anti-inflammatory nutrient. But now it's here, we find out here that lactoferrin participates in the regulation of the repair and growth process because it stimulates the production of hyaluronic acid. That's right. It stimulates the production of hyaluronic acid. And all of a sudden, this immune compound is involved with joints, discs of your back, which are made of hyaluronic acid. The synovial fluid that lubricates your joints is made of hyaluronic acid. So we're talking, you know, hyaluronic acid is the blueprint molecule for all new tissue formation in the human body. So all of a sudden, an immune compound is an activator of structural support. The researchers in this particular study found that lactoferrin signaled human skin fibroblasts. Fibroblasts are like a carpenter cell for building skin. And what these fibroblasts did when they got signaled by lactoferrin was make hyaluronic acid, i.e., start generating new collagen. Huh. So you say, well, why on earth is this happening? Well, you know, it's very interesting, but a little baby has to grow, as you'll remember. And in fact, the growth rate of a newborn child is extreme. And the ability to make new tissues dependent upon synthesizing hyaluronic acid. I don't know of any example where something that the human body makes isn't used for multiple purposes. So a mother's milk going into a little child, not only are we talking fats, carbohydrates, protein, we're also talking signaling molecules that facilitate growth, besides immune protection. Wow, it's amazing what a mother will do for a child. But this is just an example of that. So obviously you can use this to help with joint issues and so on. And it was also found, interestingly, that the lactoferrin inhibited an excessive immune response. So, you know, it's a regulator. So not only is it going to help osteoarthritis, it probably helped rheumatoid arthritis as well. Fascinating nutritional support for joints. Another study on lactoferrin, which I just happened to label the stunning immune power of lactoferrin. Lactoferrin is clearly one of the most powerful immune nutrients known. It's effective against any type of infection. Any type of infection responds to lactoferrin. And in this new study, it wasn't just that lactoferrin had germicidal activities, which it does against viruses, funguses, bacteria, parasites. In other words, this compound is smart. It knows how to kill anything. But this study showed that it's a manager of the immune cells. So now not only does it know how to kill germs, It is also involved with the intelligent management of immune cells. So you have these immune cells, they're called dendritic cells, and they sit between your frontline immune troops and your higher power immune system. So your frontline troops, they'll go out. This is your innate immunity. You have it no matter what. These cells will engulf invaders, devour them, chew them up, and they then present little pieces of them called antigens, which are parts of the invader, which signify the invader's identity. It's kind of like a fingerprint, but it's called an antigen. And they then give this information to their friends, which are called dendritic cells. And these dendritic cells then give this information to the higher-powered adaptive immune system that's going to make antibodies against this invader. So that's kind of how an immune system's higher-power response goes into play. But we also know that this it's not just this one-way flow from the frontline troops to the higher-power system. The higher-power system keeps feeding back to the frontline troops, and so it's an ongoing effort. And not only is it important that the frontline troops and the higher power troops are on the same page, they have to be managed, and these dendritic cells sit in the middle and manage, and as it turns out, lactoferrin is a primary manager of the dendritic cell response to infection. Now, you make more lactoferrin when you're exposed to infection, naturally. In other words, you have these neutrophils, which are a type of frontline soldier. When they start coming under attack, they start making lactoferrin, if they can, obviously, and they do. Most of the time, but do they make enough? Well, if you're sick, they obviously didn't. Prone to getting sick, they obviously didn't. Anyway, lactoferrin really helps this out. A very powerful immune regulator. Interesting stuff coming out on these nutrients. Good help for prevention of just about anything, including the seasonal flu. You want it on your team. Overweight children need 4,000 IU of vitamin D per day. The typical base dose range recommended by the government is 400 to 600 IU. But the researchers found here that children who are overweight, that doesn't move their needle. In other words, children who are overweight are lacking in vitamin D most often, but just giving them 400 to 600 units will not increase their vitamin D to normal levels, which are required to fight infection and help their metabolism. So basically, when some little one is getting overweight, they're actually pushing their vitamin D system out of balance, and it takes more vitamin D than has been previously thought to get them on track again. 4,000 IU a day in obese adolescents was safe, effective, and raised their vitamin D levels properly. 4,000 units is what they needed. So 10 times what the government has been telling. And this would significantly help many other things, because vitamin D is not just a vitamin. It is a hormone that is regulating all kinds of things in the human body, and not the least of which is the immune response. And that gets us to our next post, which is optimal vitamin D is a potent antiviral for the flu season. This is from research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Department of Medicine, which reviewed the important role of vitamin D in regulating the immune system, helping you to combat viral infections such as the flu. Very strong evidence that a lack of vitamin D is associated with the risk of getting the flu and upper respiratory tract infections in particular. And a number of studies demonstrate that vitamin D has direct antiviral properties as well as boosting various immune-related compounds that defend against infections, bacteria, and so on. So, you know, a lot of times we get the flu, then you get a bacteria, and the whole immune system takes a hit. Vitamin D, like lactoferrin, critical to an efficiently functioning immune system. Now, one of the articles I did last year on this, I just mentioned here in this article, which was, can vitamin D help prevent the H1N1 swine flu from spreading? Because a lot of times we think of flu spreading from sick person to sick person as part of the contagion of the illness. But actually, there's a considerable body of data that shows that individuals who are deficient in vitamin D yet well are the main perpetrators of passing the flu around. Okay, so you're well, you come into contact with the flu, it doesn't affect you, but yet you still have it on you in your airways, you pass it along to somebody else, and they're now susceptible to it. And if you were adequate in vitamin D, it wouldn't go from you to someone else. That's what this research was said that I reviewed last year. So here, again, we see the power and importance of vitamin D for everyone, even well people. as a public health measure, which would, in my opinion, of course, be far superior to the flu vaccine. In fact, you could easily replace a public health vitamin D adequacy campaign with the flu vaccine. Could be eliminated with a vitamin D adequacy campaign, in my opinion, my humble opinion. Fish oil reduces prostate cancer growth in humans. Obviously, that would be human men. But it's fascinating. These researchers were actually able to prove that around 1,000 milligrams of, 5 grams of fish oil, that gave you about 1,000 milligrams of DHA in the diet, which they proved ended up in the cell membranes, including the prostate cell membranes and the prostate cancer cell membranes. This was done in men who had, the study was done in men who had been diagnosed with prostate cancer. And so some of them took fish oil, ate a low-fat diet. All others continued their Western diet for 4 to 6 weeks while they were waiting for their surgeries to have their prostates removed. So then when they did remove their prostates, they analyzed the cells. And lo and behold, the omega-3 had showed up in there. But more importantly, their rapidly dividing cancer had been significantly reduced. So the numbers of cells that split and divide, the problematic cells, were much less. Now, that has major implications for men in general, beyond these guys that had to have their prostates out. What it means, because a lot of men have basically slow-growing prostate cancers and don't even know they have them, and they may never bother them, even if they have them, and then others do have faster-growing ones. So anytime you can use nutrition to help either, in this case, it was proved that it's directly slow down the growth of the cancer, especially for guys who don't know they even have it, which is a lot of people. I mean, it's not that easy to diagnose. The PSA is not definitive by any stretch of the imagination. My point here is that fish oil is highly lacking in the diet of just about everyone, so you have to supplement it, in my opinion, these days. And doing so is going to have a lot of benefits. So we take fish oil for cardiovascular health, for brain health, for metabolism, and now we find it's protective against prostate cancer for the guys. Good news. Last study of this podcast, fish oil helps prevent osteoarthritis. Now, fish oil is making, one of the things it's doing, there's this whole body of research out showing DHA in particular and EPA to some extent help with what are called protectins and resolvins, which are actually resolving inflammation. And so that's part of it. But here we see researchers in the United Kingdom are finding that DHA and EPA could actually reduce the signs and symptoms of osteoarthritis by influencing the biochemistry of the problem, which would then help prevent the disease, and not only help prevent it, but slow its progression and control it. That's what the researchers were saying. And that's amazing. Okay. So they're now getting very close to identifying how this fatty acid being in the cell membranes helps prevent the inflammatory process that drives the wearing out of cartilage, which is called osteoarthritis. It's a great way to keep your body. Take some fish oil. It helps preserve it. Who doesn't want to preserve body parts? We should all want that. All right, we're on now to your questions this week. First one up from Tracy. I'm going to the psychiatrist and psychologist. I have a real bad anxiety and depression. I want to know what is your suggestion. I take 4 different kinds of meds. I want to take vitamins instead. Well, yeah, it's always good to get started, Tracy, on the right foot. You want your basics in there. You want your B vitamins. I like the coenzyme B vitamins because they go into the nervous system. So daily energy multi, super B complex are good basics. You've got to get your magnesium and calcium levels up, magnesium in particular. So I like Relaxamag. I like calcium AEP for anxiety because it helps your nerves handle more energy. That's A as an apple, E as an eat, P as in Peter, calcium AEP. DHA, we've just been talking about, is very good basic for inflammation in the nerves. And then from there, you go to hobbies and crafts and stability and prediction in your life and organizing schedules and You use your fingers to do hobbies, and it helps anxiety immensely. I tell you, there's nothing quite like it because it tells the cerebellum in your brain everything is fine, everything is the same, everything is repetitive. It's like talking to your brain in machine language and telling it to calm down. You know, I mean, how many people have said to you, Tracy, what's the big deal? Why don't you just cool it? You don't need to be anxious. And that's great. It's their conscious brain talking to yours. If you want to talk to your subconscious brain in machine language, move your fingers a lot over and over again. You don't even have to like it. You just can't dislike it. You can be bored out of your mind, and it will help anxiety. Because the old brain, the hypothalamus, likes predictability. It likes stability. It likes consistency. It likes everything to be the same over and over again. So let's say you go knitting for a while, you know, and your fingers are moving back and forth. That fine motor movement communicates to your cerebellum right behind your hypothalamus. And then it sends messages into your hypothalamus telling your subconscious brain that everything is fine, everything's predictable, everything's the same. Really helps. And then nutrients, really very good at anxiety. There's many of them. The ones I've given you are just the bare bones basics. You can go to other products to help build up your nerves and your mood. We have Stress Helper. We have Super Brain Booster. We have Brain Protector. We've got a lot of stuff, Tracy, that you can do, but you start with basics if you're not really doing anything. And as you become feeling better, then you use some energy to exercise regularly, some walking and so on. And when you're really consistent, then, of course, you have your best chance of working with your doctor to reduce your dosages of things because you don't need them. Kay says, following the rules of the leptin diet, I leave 5 hours between meals. If I have a glass of water with fiber in between those meals, is that considered snacking? Thanks. Love your podcast. Kay, no, it is not considered a snack because it does not raise your blood sugar. So the whole idea of not snacking in between meals is to not raise your blood sugar. So fiber actually stabilizes blood sugar. The carbohydrate calories listed as, you know, when you're listing on a label fiber, you have to list the carbohydrates as calories. But they're not digestible carbohydrates. So they're not actually calories in the technical sense of a fuel that would raise blood sugar. They are undigestible carbohydrates, even though they have to be listed as carbs on the label. It gets kind of confusing for consumers. Fiber is not considered a snack. Valerie says, I was recently diagnosed with early stage hepatitis B. From what I've been reading, my immune response, which should hopefully clear the virus from my system, is also what causes liver inflammation and potential damage. Would a liver support supplement be helpful? Well, Valerie, when you're thinking about a liver or an immune system inflammation and potential damage, you're talking about an inefficient, inappropriate immune response. And so when you're trying to improve your immune response, it's not like you just want more things to club hepatitis B, and then you're also going to get more things that, because you ramp that up, you're now going to get more inflammation and damage as a side effect. That's not how things work. It's more about efficiency and appropriateness of the immune response. But to answer your question, would a liver support supplement be helpful? Undoubtedly, it would be helpful because your liver is under attack. So a product like Daily Balancer would be excellent support. And then I would go to antivirals that are known to knock out hepatitis, such as lauric acid, monolaurin. And you could certainly use products like Super Immune Booster, quercetin, very good viral disruptor. The Super Immune Booster has colostrum. I mean, there's a lot of options here to help disrupt the virus without toxic side effects. And, of course, if you are told to use a viral drug and do, those are toxic, and you would then definitely want liver support. But liver support and antivirals, very good way to approach this. Of course, need monitoring from your doctor. I'm not suggesting that as a medical treatment for you. This isn't medicine, Valerie. This is nutrition. So I'm not saying not to do what your doctor is telling you to do under any circumstances. Am I saying that? I'm just giving you nutritional options that you can employ, and there's certainly no reason you can't use them along with whatever your doctor's telling you to do. Judy says, hi, I'm wondering what the best immune support is for my husband. He has a lot of sore throats, congestion, and sinus problems. I looked at your products, quercetin and oregano oil, but I was wondering what you would recommend. Thanks. Well, quercetin, oregano oil, very good in general for that. Immune Plus is wonderful for the sinus problems and the congestion. With sore throats, you've probably got low-grade subclinical virals going on. I love colloidal silver on hand in the wintertime for everyone, because as soon as a sore throat starts to flare up and you go, oop, I got a bug, you take a tablespoon of colloidal, maybe another one in a couple hours, 9 times out of 10, it's just gone. You go, what? How could this be gone? And it is. So it's nice to have on hand, because it doesn't work quite as well once it's set up shop in you. It's nice to knock it out right away. But I love the Super Immune Booster product. Fantastic, especially if you're fighting the sore throats. But great strategies, very helpful. Diane says, can you explain the function of the gallbladder and what are the symptoms if you think there is a problem? Also, how can you avoid surgery? Well, the gallbladder is storing bile and then releasing it, hopefully, at a meal. And when it does that, the bile will break apart the fats in the meal, as well as the bile is storing toxins that the liver is clearing. And so it will tend to dump those into the digestive tract, and hopefully you'll have enough fiber and whatnot to bind them up and get them out. So gallbladder problems, the gallbladder gets stagnant, especially in women. Estrogen tends to supersaturate the fats in the gallbladder, making it sluggish and sticky instead of flowing. So we're talking about oils, basically, fat-soluble substances here. So it's kind of like, it's sticky and gooey and lardy as opposed to olive oily, where it just kind of flows. So that problem happens for a variety of reasons: toxic excess, dietary overload, too much sugar. I mean, there's lots of things. But what do you do if you have, what are the symptoms? Well, the symptoms are uncontrolled bile release at the wrong times, excessive in response to a meal. You start getting nauseous when it gets really bad, and that's in response to eating fats or fatty foods. So people who eat fats of any kind, or bad, like a big meal of junk fat, and then get very nauseous, even throwing up, those are signs of a very congested gallbladder. But you can also have burning across your diaphragm. It feels like your lower rib cage can be on fire from the bile acids burning. Most indigestion, believe it or not, is not acid indigestion. It's actually refluxed bile. So just about anybody with indigestion actually has a stagnant gallbladder that then releases bile excessively at the wrong time, including when meals are eaten. And that's a big, that's probably 90% of heartburn. So it's worth regulating. How can you fix it? Well, not snacking in between meals is a great way to help. Reducing the amount of sugar you eat is another good one. Nutrients that are called lipotropic, which means fat flowing from the liver, but they help fat flow is the point. So the most lipotropic nutrient is choline. And so we use products like Activator Plus at meals to help. You can use phosphatidylcholine, which is a super strength lecithin. If you really have a lot of problems, you just take one every meal. It helps to make it flow. In our daily balancer, we use dandelion, which helps to move bile through the gallbladder. Nutrients like curcumin, which we use in Repair Plus, for example, that's a gallbladder mover, bile mover. So there's a number of nutrients that help the gallbladder move, and there's a number of nutrients that help fat flow better. Choline family is very good. Acetyl-L-carnitine is very good. Tocotrienol E is very good. So you have a lot of options of things, and in almost all cases you can avoid surgery. Now, you can have a bad obstruction of gallstones or something, and it's a real medical problem. But there's 600,000 gallbladders taken out every year in the United States, most of them needlessly, because insurance pays for the operation without even asking twice. So that's what happens there. And most of those. I'm one of these people, if you've got a body part, you might as well keep it and get it working right. Just because you take out your gallbladder doesn't mean anything is going to be better, because you really haven't solved anything. Sometimes you have to take out parts because they're just too diseased to function anymore. But when it comes to gallbladders, the medical professional yank them out without even thinking twice about a little problem, because they get paid for it. Good cash flow. All right, Sue says, you are my nutritional hero, thank you, Sue. So I just had to come to you for advice on this. For the past 7 years or so, I've had toenail fungus on all 5 toes of my right foot. I am very health conscious, eat well, I'm healthy weight. I've been applying tea tree oil topically daily for the past year. I take probiotics daily. Nothing has helped. Unfortunately, I'm currently finishing up a 30-day round of this doxycycline for Lyme disease. Got bit by a tick, which I imagine will set me back fungally. However, I have begun to take oregano oil orally and apply it topically to the toenails as well. I am wondering if you would give me advice on how you would handle this type of situation. I feel my toenails are my Achilles heel prior to the antibiotic. I have had no other signs and symptoms of candida or fungus anywhere else. Even my allergies are gone. Am I on the right track? And if so, how much oregano oil should I take? Anything else I should try, like liver support? Well, Sue, from the overall picture, you're definitely on the right track of things in general. But yet you have this, like you said, this weak spot. And toenail fungus is not a trivial issue. It's not a trivial health issue because the fungus can just go right into the bloodstream from the toenail bed and cause lots of problems around your body. So it's not a good thing. You're doing a bunch of things. It hasn't really worked yet. So you haven't found an agent. I mean, sometimes tea tree oil works. Sometimes citricidal works. Sometimes the oregano oil works. It's a stickler of an issue. Besides the digestive stuff and flora, which I think is very helpful, I always recommend Daily Builder. I used to just recommend it because I thought it helped the nail bed grow. And then I found out the high niacinamide in it was a great fungal. But I have had tremendous results with that, Sue. So Daily Builder, 8 a day. You can use that as your calcium source. 8 will give you 1,000 milligrams of calcium. But it is a really great toenail grower plus candida killer. And also to help your nails grow better, you might consider a strengthener plus or 2 per day, which has extra zinc in it and will strengthen the nails, help them grow better. And then for nasty, sticky things, I mean, it's hard to know what you put on it is going to work. Sometimes oregano does. And normally, you'll get pain up your nails shooting up your leg when you're killing the stuff. Not always, but most of the time. So you kind of know something's happening. If you find something working well, every 3 or 4 days, give it a break for a few days, let your toes catch up. Sometimes it helps to mix them around, Sue, going from oregano to back to tea tree oil over to the citricidal. The very best product, though, for your sticky problem here is something called Lowell Sand. We have it at our office. You can just give them a call. It's a liquid, and I would soak your feet. You basically fill up as hot of water as you can stand and dump in a couple tablespoons of Lowell Sand and soak your feet in it for an hour while you're watching TV. Do that like 3 nights in a row. And then give it a couple days off and then repeat it maybe 3 days in a row over the course of a month, maybe 4 or 5 times, and you should get somewhere. That stuff will kill anything. All right, that's it for the podcast this week. If you have a question, please email it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. Have a great week and take care.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated, copyright 2008, all rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.